This is the kind of decision that gets you fired.
Yes, you're right. I may lose my job. In which case, I'm a 44-year-old guy with a high school diploma and a daughter I'd like to be able to send to college. You're 25 years old, with a degree from Yale and a pretty impressive apprenticeship. I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is...
Do you listen to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM every Thursday?
I do.
Now I'm going to see this thing through for better or worse.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you with us tonight, everybody, as Jen and I get set for probably at least the biggest interview so far of 2021 that we've done with some people, some great people that we have with us here tonight. Jenna, how's everything going?
It's, you know, same old, just surviving. Yeah. How are you?
Every week is same old with you, so... That's okay. Glad to have you same olding with us again here, Jenna. So we're not gonna waste too much time because we have a lot to go over with our two illustrious guests today. Ladies and gentlemen, today's guests not only represent the best of the best when it comes to women's hockey, but they likely have more precious metal in their homes with all the accolades they've earned over the course of their careers than most jewelry stores. Needless to say, Jen and I are honored to welcome these two women to the show today. Among their many honors, they are Olympic gold medalists in 2018 while earning a pair of silver medals in 2010 and 2014. They are six-time Women's World Championship gold medalists, which outshine the one silver medal they took home in 2012. They were standout freshmen with the University of Minnesota before transferring home to become the backbones of the University of North Dakota women's hockey program. While only one of them can claim a CWHL Clarkson Cup victory, both have been important parts of championing the women's game and improving the benefits for women playing hockey while becoming moms for the first time to baby boys, first-time authors, and fashion designers, all while being the young age of just 31. So they're doing everything. Tonight, The Hockey Show is proud, honored, privileged, humbled, and pleased to welcome the dynamic American Olympic sister duo of Jocelyn Lamoureux-Davidson and Monique Lamoureux-Mirando to the show. Ladies, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Hopefully we got enough squeezed into that intro to at least make you a little bit proud of what you've done.
More than enough. That's for sure.
That's awesome. We'll get into it in a few minutes here, but how's retirement treating you so far?
It's been good. I mean, since COVID, we haven't really traveled a whole lot, if at all. I actually haven't been on a plane since last year, but it's been good. It's been a good change of pace for us, especially with growing families. So it's been good. We're looking forward to kind of what's next and still staying pretty busy. I don't know if we're any less busy. It's just a different type of busy.
I feel like that's the same everyone with COVID right now. And especially, you know, obviously you guys played hockey forever. You're busy with that, but you guys have young kids now and you're still doing all, you know, workouts, exercises, all that, and then raising your family, which is awesome. So before we get too deep into the retirement talk, we'll just need to go way back to the beginning here. So July 3rd, 1989, when a pair of baby girls joined the Lamoureux household to push the total number of Lamoureux kids to six. What was life like for young Jocelyn and Monique growing up in Grand Forks, North Dakota, with four older brothers and a ton of hockey?
Well, whenever we're talking about our family, we always talk about how our mom had six kids in under 6 years, and so now that we're parents, it's even more crazy to think about what our parents had to go through, because we have 2-year-olds right now and you just never stop moving and you never sit down. And we just, I have two now, Jelson has one, but I just can't even imagine six. But our brothers, we always wanted to tag along with them. And the one rule was if we were going to play with them, that we had to keep up. And so otherwise we'd have to like sit and watch. And so from a very young age, we learned how to have to always like work really hard and try our best in order to keep up. And our brothers did not take it easy on us. That was for sure. If anything, they were probably more inclined to like shove us into the snow or knock us over just because we were smaller than them.
I mean, you guys went over a pile of your childhood, I guess, in the new co-authored book that you guys wrote, Dare to Make History, Chasing a Dream and Fighting for Equality. So we won't go super in depth on the childhood stuff, but you two played a ton of hockey growing up, mainly boys hockey, where your parents basically heard a lot of the comments made by other parents that were, I'm going to say, slightly unflattering to those parents. We still see some of this today, despite things getting better, obviously, for girls in terms of playing hockey. What advice would you have for parents whose daughters may be the target of some unfair criticism based upon your own experiences?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you know, keeping the bigger picture of why kids are in sport, keeping that the main thing. I think parents, when their kids are participating in sports, sometimes get these unique parent glasses on and I think lose perspective on reality a little bit and how these adults are treating kids. I mean, our parents heard some pretty, I would say, not flattering things throughout our careers, but we also heard some of that too from the stands. Parents would yell loud enough for us to hear. And as parents now, I mean, I think it's, you want your kids to grow up, and if they're able to continue to pursue sports into high school and maybe even lucky enough into college, like that's an amazing opportunity. But the lessons that you learn from sports, that, I mean, those are the big take home, you know, messages and things you want your kids to learn. And so I would say, you know, for parents who have kids playing, whether that's at a rec level or a competitive level, to make sure that you're making the life lessons the main priority, not points and assists and talking negatively about other players, but building up teammates and showing your kid how to be a good teammate to others. I think that's the most important thing.
Well, and I mean, Jocelyn, you wrote your thesis on this. Was it the same for some of the players that you interviewed for your thesis?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of us, I would say on the national team, didn't have the opportunity to play on girls' teams. So we had to play on boys' teams. And I would say that landscape has definitely changed in the last 10 years. There's definitely way more opportunities for young girls to play on competitive girls' teams growing up. But I would say, you know, Monique and I definitely weren't alone in our experience. We have teammates that have very similar experiences growing up the way we did.
So you guys spoke about in your book just about how much Cami Granato's career meant to you as the 1998 Nagano Olympics approached, and you saw some similarities between her career and your own careers. She was the face of the U.S. Olympic team for so long, so it took everyone by surprise when she was cut prior to the 2006 Torino Olympics. Do you feel this was maybe a mistake by USA Hockey, considering everything she had done and all that she meant to the players in the program?
Well, I don't think it's a coincidence that they cut one of their best players. And I believe she was the captain at the time. And then you go to the Olympics and you get bronze when you're – and everyone knows that you should be in the gold medal game against Canada. So the fact that those coincided, I don't think that's a coincidence. It's really unfortunate that she didn't make that team. I don't know the reasons why she wasn't on that team. And I think a lot of people question that over the years, but unfortunately that's what happened. But I think we saw some similarities going through our 2017, 2018 Olympic journey. Just Joss and I, we made that team by the skin of our teeth. And so we went through a lot of adversity and struggles, throughout that season. But she grew up in a big household, had a couple older brothers, and probably had to go through a lot more growing up as far as playing on boys teams and competing at a high level. I mean, for that 98 team, those players growing up didn't have a team to us. They didn't have an Olympic team to look up to. They really had to, their dreams were, they were just dreams. They didn't have something that could be a reality. And so though, I think those are vastly different landscapes that they had growing up compared to us.
I mean, I think there's a lot of, you know, things that people don't see just in general. I mean, if you look at our Olympic experience, especially in 2018, you know, Monique and I played very well, but you'd have to pay close enough attention to know that even though we were doing really well in producing, we were, I think, like 10th and 11th as far as ice time goes for forwards on our team. And so I think, you know, as an athlete, that's just kind of how it is. People watch you play and then they don't really know the backstory or the adversity that you go through to get to where you are, or, you know, the ups and downs, which every athlete faces. So I think that's just part of the life of being an athlete and playing on, you know, playing on these big stages, is that people don't always know the backstory. And sometimes it's fitting to share it, and sometimes it, you know, it's not. And I think what Monique and I want people or fans or young kids to know is that no matter what type of adversity you go through, if you have the right type of attitude and you put in the work and, you know, and prepare, you can still execute and perform in the biggest moments. And so I think that's the important lesson in sharing, you know, our story and our journey and moments of adversity. You know, those are the lessons we want people to take away.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good lesson to certainly pass on. So thanks for that. I do want to ask, though, you wrote about your brother Jacques and the struggles he went through with his mental health. Far too often, I think fans maybe see you guys, maybe see other players, you know, who are amazing people, amazing athletes who have these incredible jobs. You know, you win all the time. You're all over the world, traveling all over the world. But there's often a lot of the sacrifices to be made that, you know, have to be done in order to be as good as you two are. One of those obviously is being, you know, away from family members and having distance between family members. How difficult was it for you two to sort of see and hear about Jacques' struggles while playing at times, you know, extremely far away from him?
Yeah. So we talk about this in our book. And I think when we were starting out in the writing process, this was a story that we, as long as our brother was comfortable with it, we really wanted to tell it, because it was, I think it's an important thing that we went through in our lives. Even though we didn't experience the mental illness ourselves, we had a sibling that went through it, and so we have a different perspective on it and how we manage it. But I think it really shaped in how we treat people and just the empathy that we have for others. And you truly never know what someone is going through. I mean, at the time, we were in seventh grade, our brother was a sophomore, had won a state championship in hockey, I think was the leading scorer in the state that year, had a lot of friends, and was internally going through this major struggle. And so I think when we went to, it wasn't until we went to Shattuck when we were in high school that we truly learned about the depths of his struggles and that he went through, because he wrote about it and talked about it. And it was really hard being away from home and learning about that. But I think we talking through it with our parents and then seeing our brother, shortly after that, and to know that he was willing to talk about it. This was back in 2005 or six, I believe, when it wasn't like athletes weren't talking about it. Pro athletes and professional athletes were talking about their mental struggles, because you're just taught from a young age to push it down and not talk about it, and you don't deal with it. It's not there. You're fine. And that's, I think that landscape and how people talk about mental illness has vastly changed since then. And so it's to be able to go through that with our brother and just going through the writing process, it was really, I think it was really reflective for us, and just, it really shaped us in how we, I think, treat other people and just view mental illness. It's just like any other illness. If you're sick, you go to the doctor and you talk about it, or you get medicine, just like if it's a mental, you go to the doctor, you talk about it, you figure out a way, or figure out a treatment plan.
Yeah. I think mental health is something, obviously, you know, now it's definitely talked about a lot more, but even still, just for athletes now, I think there's still a lot of people that there's still that stigma. So being able to talk about it, I mean, that's awesome that, you know, he was finally able to, you know, talk about it, write about it, and for you guys too, just to kind of understand that, because I think that plays a huge role in sports more than people really realize. But speaking of traveling a little bit, your junior year of high school, we saw you visit our great city of Winnipeg here, where you played in the Bison's Invitational Tournament, where you guys lost in overtime to Team Manitoba. What happened and what do you recall about that game where Manitoba stole one from you?
I mean, I think the big thing was we learned, you know, not to overlook opponents. And I think that was the start of Monique and I recognizing that, you know, the whole is greater than its parts as far as, you know, not trying to do everything ourselves when the team, you know, when we were in a close game, to utilize our teammates and utilize their strengths and to have trust in your teammates. I think at a young age, especially if you're a really good player, it's easy to, you know, try to do it all by yourself. And so I think for us, that was a good individual lesson to start recognizing that it doesn't always have to be on our shoulders. And I think we talk about that later in the chapter and the part of the book that you're talking about. But yeah, I think we made that trip to Winnipeg. I think every year we'd play University of Manitoba, Team Saskatchewan, and we're from North Dakota, so it was always a fun trip for our parents to make, an easy trip for them to get up to Winnipeg. And so we always have fond memories of playing there.
So the 2009 Four Nations Cup saw something that had never happened before. Team USA head coach Katie Stone selected Jocelyn for the team, but not Monique. Clearly, it was hard on both of you, but it led to a revelation from Monique, who went to win the WCHA Rookie of the Year Award and led the WCHA in scoring. You guys didn't dwell on it too much in the book, but how weird was it not having each other around for a few weeks?
I think it was just a bittersweet experience to make the team and not have Monique there. You know, our journeys have always been very parallel, and it's the only team that we've ever not made together. And so to make a team without Monique is just not really ever something we pictured or imagined. But in the book, we talk about, you know, how important it was for Monique to have a great college, the rest of the college season. She just needed to be lights out, and that's exactly what she did. And we ended up both making the world's team later that season. And so it ended up working out. And I mean, you look at moments like that and how that shapes, you know, your work ethic moving forward. And Monique just took it and used it as motivation. And, you know, even though I got to go to the tournament, I was right there with her because I wanted, you know, just as bad as her for both of us to be there. And so it's one of the bumps in the road where we didn't go through it together.
In a way, it was probably a little bit harder on Jocelyn because she went to the tournament and then I wasn't, and then it was just you for the 2 weeks. So in a way, it was probably a little bit difficult for you as well. But I just, like Jocelyn said, you can take different moments in your career and kind of look at them as turning points. And I feel like I really use that as a turning point and knowing that, okay, this is a bump in the road, but it's not gonna define our success. And I think for me, I just use that as motivation to, okay, I know I really need to perform during my college season and our upcoming camp if I want to make this world's team. It's not the end of the world that I'm not at Four Nations, but even though it felt like the end of the world at times, but knowing that I had other areas where I could prove myself and showcase myself as a hockey player. And I feel like that's what I focused on and that's what I put my energy into, and not dwelling on the fact that I didn't make that roster, because that roster wasn't going to determine whether I was on an Olympic team or not. And so I think just really how you frame it moving forward, I think is really important for athletes to learn, because no path to success is completely linear. You're going to go through bumps in the road throughout your journey. And I think it's important for athletes, especially young athletes, to recognize that.
You're older now, Monique, and certainly still have a relationship with Katie Stone. And do you remind her about how much of a mistake she made in 2009, or no?
Honestly, I don't even know if she remembers that. So there's different, I think coaches have very different memories in there. I'm trying to think when they called Jocelyn to tell her they made the team. Jocelyn was like, oh, Monique's in the other room, I can go grab her. And she was like, oh, no, we're making calls throughout the week. So that was kind of a hint that I wasn't going to be making the roster. But, I mean, Coach Stone was our Olympic coach in 2014 and throughout that quad leading up to the 2014 Olympics. And so I always thought we had a pretty good relationship with her. So I never once really threw that out there. I suppose I probably could have at some point. Or just asked her why Jocelyn over me, I guess.
I mean, yeah, I'm not and I don't expect you to put her on the spot, or they would just, you know, just needling her a little bit and, hey, you remember when?
Yeah.
Summer 2009, you guys kind of set the college hockey world on fire because you guys transfer home to the University of North Dakota in Dare to Make History in your book. It seems like no one put up many or even any roadblocks to sort of stop you from leaving Minnesota. Obviously, you know, the home ties and everything like that makes sense. But was having 2010 as an Olympic year kind of easier for everyone to accept the transfer since you wouldn't be playing in the NCAA again until 2010-2011? Like, was that sort of gap year for that 1 year easier for everybody to digest?
I guess I get kind of hard to speak for everyone else in that situation. Sure, yeah. But I mean, for us, we had to take a full, we had to be full-time students during that season to be able to play the following year.
Right.
So that technically was our redshirt year. And so a lot of people, you know, aren't aware that the transfer rule was different in the WCHA, or is different in the WCHA, that you have to sit out a year. And so even though we technically sat out our college season, or we did sit out our college season, we still had to take full-time classes. So it definitely, I mean, for us, it was a full schedule being, you know, on the Olympic team in residency, taking full-time classes online. It was a busy year for us, but I guess maybe a little bit for people, since we were out for a year in college hockey, it was easier for them to get used to the idea that we'd be at North Dakota. But I guess we didn't really concern ourselves with how other people were responding.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, you two were named to the 2010 Team USA Olympic team heading to Vancouver. How cool is it to be going to the Olympics to represent your country after watching so many others do it? And what was the coolest part of the Olympic experience for both of you?
I think it being our first Olympics, I think you just remember opening ceremony and being able to walk in with the rest of Team USA. I think a funny story for us is our parents had tickets for it, but then almost missed it. They got there just in time to see us walk in with the parade of athletes. And then after the ceremony, our parents were actually sitting right behind the USA delegation. So we got to see them afterwards, which was pretty cool and a pretty full circle moment for us, knowing that they've been there through the entire journey. So to see us achieve part of our Olympic dream is something that's really special for us. And I think something that we'll always cherish now that we're retired and no longer playing. But I think having just those moments where your family gets to experience part of the dream with you, I think those are the ones that you take home with you and hold close.
Who was the biggest celebrity that you met in Vancouver that year?
Trying to think that way back now. I don't know if we really met a ton of celebrities. We got to, you know, see a ton of athletes in the cafeteria, where it's a community cafeteria basically, and you get to meet a ton of athletes, which is pretty cool. But I think I can't really pinpoint one. Just being able to be in that environment where you're seeing athletes you know, go out to compete and then come back from their competition is a pretty cool experience.
I find that odd that nobody actually came to meet you guys. Like, usually there's a request to meet, you know, the team or players or whatever. I mean, especially with the number of celebrities that were down there, I'm shocked that nobody was like, hey, I want to go meet Team USA. But I guess that just didn't happen.
So 2011, you two played in the Four Nations Cup. You won the tournament with Team USA and then came back to rejoin UND, where, Monique, you decided to switch things up by moving to the blue line to help with the breakouts. Do you prefer playing forward or defense more?
It kind of depends, but I guess I would probably prefer to play defense. I just feel like I add a different element than most defensemen do. I think they're offensive defensemen are becoming much more popular over the past couple of years, but I think just having played both positions basically throughout my entire hockey career, I've always been able to switch back and forth even throughout a game. So I would say I would prefer to play defense though, because I just feel like you can kind of see everything that's going on around you. You get to pick and choose your offense when you want to jump into the offense and pick your moments. And so I feel like you have a little bit more control of the play as far playing defense as well. So if I had to pick one, I would say defense, but I always enjoy playing forward with Jocelyn, so I can't complain about that.
We got a few minutes left with you guys. I want to make sure we get one sort of last sort of big questioning, because it's really the thing that sort of stands out about, maybe about more so than what you did on the ice, maybe what you did off of it. You guys went out and basically changed the experience for everybody that wears Team USA colors now by pushing hard for equality. And I think that really, that chapter, I mean, I must have read that 3 or 4 times in the book, just because, again, I was, you know, all the details and all the information you guys put in there. In Dare to Make History was all about, you know, the struggle to sort of get that done. I know people always talk about leaving things in a better place when you leave a program. How proud are you that knowing that basically you guys infinitely made that possible? Like that it's going to be as strong as it is forever because of all the effort you put in behind the scenes?
Well, I think our book tries to highlight the importance of making a difference beyond just trying to win games and chase medals. And that moment in our career, I think, is what we're definitely most proud of, because it, like you said, it's going to change the landscape for women's hockey, not just in the U.S., but I think set a standard globally for women's national teams. And so we want to set the bar. And so, you know, we've been talking a lot about our early career, and you know, as we moved on in our national team experience, we definitely started to learn and educate ourselves on things that just simply weren't being done the way they should, and the players weren't being supported in the way they should. And so to be able to be a part of the group, the leadership group that really took a stand and got the team organized in an effort to basically, you know, take on USA Hockey and create these changes is something that we'll forever be proud of. And as, you know, we get older and more removed from our hockey careers, it'll definitely, I think, hold, you know, significantly more importance than any of the wins that we had on the ice.
Monique, feel the same way, yeah?
Absolutely. I think when we look back at our careers, that moment and that what our team was able to accomplish, I don't think I've ever been, I mean, even comparing it to our gold medal team, I think what we were able to accomplish, and not just the team, but all the players that stood behind us and supported us, I think I've never been so proud of a group of players and proud to call a group of people teammates. And so it's definitely a highlight. And I would say it's hard to say that it tops your gold medal, our gold medal experience, but it's pretty close, like pretty even, I would say.
I mean, like I said, the stuff that we, you know, again, you just hear the surface stuff in terms of what comes out. You don't hear about all the back stuff that you guys put in the book. And certainly that's a good reason to pick up, you know, Dare to Make History. But again, I think that battle is certainly going to make everybody's lives better going forward. And I mean, as a teammate, as like, that's the biggest teammate move you can do. So congratulations to both of you, and certainly on finding that equality, because certainly without you guys, I don't think it would ever, it may have happened, but not happened as well as it did. So.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that.
As we do near our time limit, I do want to mention one thing, though, because I think I kind of need to, I'm going to apologize to both of you. I reviewed your book, and you guys called me out on it, because I wrote that quote, I have a small part of me who simply hates seeing the Lamoureux sisters lining up against Team Canada, which you guys promptly called me out because you thought I was saying I hate you. I don't. It is 100% respect, and I want to make sure that you know that just because you guys Hulk Hogan Canada too many times in your career, that there was always that, why are they so good kind of feeling. But hockey without you guys is going to look a lot different, and I want to make sure that you know that you got, the door will always be open for this show, but secondly, that 100% respect up here in Winnipeg for what you guys are doing. You guys are legitimately trailblazers, and certainly you know, hockey wouldn't be the same without you guys, is not going to be the same without you guys. So whatever you have to do, whatever you're going to do in the future in terms of retirement, enjoy it. But yeah, there's always room on this show if you guys have any news you want to get out or any announcements you want to put out, for sure.
Awesome. Thank you, we appreciate that.
I'll let you get out of here. Thank you to both Jocelyn Lamoureux-Davidson and Monique Lamoureux-Mirando for their time today. Best of luck in the future, ladies, and all the best going forward in whatever you take on.
Awesome. Thanks. they appreciate it. I'm sure we'll be on later.
There are the Lamoureux twins. Glad to have them with us here tonight. Always great to talk to two great Olympians and certainly two amazing people such as them. We're going to take a quick commercial break here on The Hockey Show, come back after the break and go over all the news and stories that broke this week. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be back just on the other side of these ads. Located on the first floor of UMSU University Center, GPA's is the place to soothe those hunger cravings, whether you're looking for candy, chocolate, chips, or some other type of snacky goodness. We boast the best selection of coffee and tea on campus, a variety of fresh sandwiches and baked goods are available daily, and our coolers are stocked with a wide variety of beverages to quench your thirst. Currently open Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m., we're proudly student-operated with pricing that fits your budget.
Gotta relax.
This is Earth Radio, and now here's human music.
Human music. I like it.
Human music, heard live on CJUM 101.5 in Winnipeg. Welcome back to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM. Glad to have you along, everybody, as we come out of the break after that great interview with the Lamoureux twins. I mean, just amazing women those two ladies are. And I mean, as much as they're American and I'll never cheer for them, I have to cheer for them just because they're so awesome.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that one. And they're incredible hockey players and definitely incredible women as well. So that was a lot of fun.
Good to meet them. And certainly, I mean, we'll certainly keep in touch and see if we can have them back at some point. We got a lot to go over, though. Actually, you know what? Before we do that, before we get to the news, I do want to say locally one piece of news before we get going. Folks, I'm going to remind you at the end of the show of this as well. But tomorrow, St. Adolph is up for grabs in terms of Kraft Hockeyville. Get over to crafthockeyville.ca, register to vote. If you don't register, you can't vote, but get over there, register. And then from 8 a.m. tomorrow till 5 p.m. on Sunday, stuff that ballot box. Get over there and vote. We want St. Adolph to win a preseason hockey game between two NHL teams. Hopefully not the Jets, because they've seen enough of the Jets, but two great NHL teams that will come in and play at St. Adolph Arena. To do that, they have to win, which means that you have to go vote. So get out there and vote. And we'll remind you at the end of the show of this as well. Okay, so now that we got that local plug in, because we want to make sure that St. Adolph wins, and certainly want to see them host an NHL game and get the massive renovation to their arena. That would be awesome too. Let's get into the COVID story. We'll start in Vancouver, where virtually every Canucks player has it now, and most of their coaching staff and their taxi squad. As of yesterday, 19 of 22 Canucks players have COVID-19, with Jake Virtanen and Nate Schmidt being the latest added to the list. Included in the list are both Braden Holtby and Thatcher Demko, who are their two goalies, as you may be well aware, Nils Höglander, Quinn Hughes, and Bo Horvat. So basically all of their stars. Again, two coaches and two taxi squad members are in quarantine as well. The NHL announced yesterday, and this is where things just went bananas, the NHL announced yesterday that the NHL feels that games for the Vancouver Canucks can resume by the end of next week.
Perfect.
I'm no doctor, and I'm certainly not an infectious, you know, disease specialist by any means, but it seems like it might be a little rushed. Just saying.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Definitely a little bit rushed on that side there.
The weird part is that they've been in contact with Utica. Utica is their AHL affiliate, and Utica said that they are willing to supply some players, and they've already recalled a couple players from Manitoba and other places. Utica, for what it's worth, had their own COVID problems earlier in March, and they haven't played since March 10th. They haven't practiced until Monday when they first hit the ice again. And again, Vancouver is now calling them up. We're talking about players now that haven't played for a full month of hockey. And we're trying to work these guys from the AHL into the NHL spots and hoping that they can maybe win a few games.
Yeah, I don't really. I knew this was going to happen at some point, you know, like we saw it happening in the States and stuff. And here we are now. But like, I mean, why not just obviously, yeah, like it's hard if you just don't let them play for a while. It's going to be harder to fill it in, you know, towards the end of the season. Like, what's the point of basically at this point, they're just going to have like a completely new team, essentially, you know, like what's the point of that? Just have a couple games. Like,
but I mean, if you're going in, and again, I'm not saying that this is going to happen, and I certainly hope it doesn't happen, but you're going into an environment in Vancouver right now because don't forget we're flying in, where there's an absolute outbreak right now due to the fact that people are coming in on international flights and bringing COVID with them. Like, that's where they're basically pinpointing all of these outbreaks from, is that it's international travelers coming back, or international, you know, people who have been away internationally and coming back to Vancouver. And that's where they're bringing the COVID in. And I go, you're going to send all these guys through the airport to quarantine, because they're going to have to quarantine for 7 days here in Canada, only to find out that they may have COVID as well again.
They only have to quarantine 7 days, or is it 2 weeks?
No, well, it's seven days now. According to the trade deadline rules, it sounds like the Canucks believe that it's going to be 7 days.
Oh,
to me, 14 days would make more sense. But again,
they're trying to start playing. So, I mean, what? Right.
And if they are predicting next Friday as being, that would be your 7 days of quarantine.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this whole thing with Vancouver,
one or 2 days, are going to bring them up, make them sit there for 7 days and just say, hey, here you go, it's game time. Like,
right. Yeah. I mean, this is the thing, like, we're talking about, this could get better for Vancouver. It could also go drastically worse for them if that's the case.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, I guess we'll see what happens, but Vancouver is basically your petri dish right now for all the COVID work that between the AHL and NHL. We'll see what happens there. We move one province over to the Alberta Junior Hockey League, which resumed play on February 19th. Note that date, because as of right now, six more teams have been told that they need to quarantine for a minimum of 14 days, starting from back on April 1st. Those teams include Drayton Valley, Grand Prairie, White Court, Camrose, Okotoks, Drumheller. So all six of those teams have been quarantining in some capacity since April 1st.
That's insane.
Remember, they wanted to get back and play. They pushed the Alberta government to open up, and now they have six teams on the sidelines again.
Like, we finally got what we wanted, but hey, sucks to suck. Now we all have to just hang out for... That's terrible. This is that's just awful.
I mean, if you got what you wanted and then you couldn't play with it nicely, so it's broken again. Like, I don't understand why we have to...
We can't have nice things.
Right. We keep driving this home. We skip over at least Saskatchewan and Manitoba, who aren't having so many hockey problems right now because nobody's playing in those provinces. But we get to Toronto, where, again, Nylander was held out against Montreal for the Leafs due to COVID testing. There's a possible positive test there. He hasn't been put back in as of today, so we don't know what's happening with Nylander right now. But if this turns into a Vancouver Canucks with the Toronto Maple Leafs, holy smokes.
Yeah. Oh. That would not, yeah, I just don't see it going well, you know what I mean? Especially, you know, Ontario, never mind like hockey alone, but Ontario's having, you know, huge outbreak state of emergency right now, but then they're like, oh, our NHL teams are still going to play, and I don't know, I just don't see that going well at all.
Well, speaking of NHL teams that are going to play, Winnipeg is on the road, they're heading to Montreal.
Okay,
gonna stop in Ottawa and then head over to Montreal is kind of in the red zone right now for Quebec, because the QMJHL, which also pushed hard to reopen their doors and get people back and have teams playing, as of Tuesday, sat down the Gatineau Olympiques, who have 11 positive cases, and the Quebec Remparts, who have 4 positive cases. Also sat down, because of the contact tracing, are the 3 teams that they played last week in Baie-Comeau, Blainville, Boisbriand, and Rimouski. All must quarantine for 14 days as well.
That's literally all I have to say.
Oh, we're not done there though.
Okay.
As we move south of the border, where the NCAA's Frozen Four gets excited for this weekend, everybody's looking forward to the big games in Pittsburgh as the 3 Minnesota teams and the 1, you know, Massachusetts team get ready to play. The UMass Minutemen, though, will be out a few key players. Starting netminder Philippe Lindbergh, leading scorer, and may I remind you, 4th in the nation with 17 goals, Carson Jisevich, forward Jerry Harding, and number 3 goalie Henry Graham are all not going to Pittsburgh due to COVID protocols. So you're basically asking UMass to use their backup goalie and try and make up the difference for their leading scorer from everybody else because four players are under COVID protocols. Here's where things get a little off track, though, for everybody. If you were paying attention there, you did notice that I might have mentioned that their starting goaltender and their number three goalie won't make the trip. If you're aware, most college programs carry three goalies, which means that there's only one goalie heading to Pittsburgh. That would be senior Matt Murray. Again, he's your backup normally. He will start against defending champion Minnesota Duluth tonight.
Oh, perfect.
His backup netminder, because they don't have anybody else, will be university senior equipment manager Zach Steigmeier.
Okay.
Their equipment manager will be fully dressed as the backup tonight. For the record, he's a senior in university. The last time he played net in any sort of meaningful game, he was a backup goalie in high school. He played at Springfield Cathedral and Pope Francis after Cathedral was shut down. So we're asking a backup high school goalie to basically back up a backup goalie in the Frozen Four.
If I were the other team, not saying I want anyone to get hurt, but at this point, you know, take the goalie out, throw that backup goalie in, and it's an easy win, hopefully.
I mean, Minnesota Duluth is a great team regardless. Like, they're the defending champions. And yeah. I mean, they beat UND last week, or in that overtime game a couple weeks ago, whatever. I don't know if Minnesota Duluth is going to have much problem with UMass tonight, but like, seriously, like, you have a backup goal. And I'm not saying Matt Murray's a bad goalie. I mean, he's a backup. He's good enough to play on the team regularly. Like, he gets in there, but he's not your starter, and he's certainly not the backup equipment manager, but that's UMass for you. So thanks to COVID protocols, UMass has been decimated. If you're wondering, St. Cloud State plays Minnesota State in the other semifinal with the final, I'm going to say right now, with the all Minnesota final scheduled for Saturday.
Oh my goodness. Honestly, I can't wait until we can, you know, not talk about COVID ruining everything one of these days.
But again, we don't pay attention to it for a couple of weeks, and we come back and we have like 10 stories about how ridiculous it is again. Like,
and they're like 10 stories that started 2 weeks ago, but they're still happening.
Right. Like, and that's the part where you just go like, come on, like, what are you doing? You guys begged for this. Still on the COVID trail, though, speaking about stories that happened weeks ago. You may recall that we mentioned that the NWHL had shut down their playoff because of all of the COVID problems that they had when it broke out in Lake Placid, New York. There's still fallout from that problem. In that, New York State Olympic Regional Development Authority Assistant Counsel Adam Powers has filed basically a request for the NWHL to fulfill their contract because they, quote, materially breached their obligations to comply with COVID-19 obligations, unquote. Basically, the New York State Olympic, whatever, Regional Development Authority is saying that the NWHL's COVID outbreak was, quote, solely attributable to the acts and omissions of the NWHL. So basically, they're saying that the NWHL caused the problem, and now we want you to fulfill basically, you breached your contract. Yeah. So of the $225,000 it cost to secure that location, the New York State Olympic Regional Development Authority is seeking the second half of the payment, which is $112,500 for a league that has six teams who have $150,000 salary cap. We're talking about basically paying out a seventh team here.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks, but also we talked about that when it's happening, because if you were on social media, you know, like, they're all like in the hotel lobbies posting things together, like, you know, like, they, nobody was really, they're like, oh, we're in our so-called bubble, so we're just gonna pretend that COVID doesn't exist, and then bam, it exists. So that sucks, but at the same time, like, I don't know, there's rules you have to follow, there's guidelines, like, it just, why would not make it safe? I don't know.
The rules exist and they're there for a reason, and you broke them and now you'll pay for them. So I'm not saying that there's a right or wrong here. I understand that if you had a contract and you broke it, like, you should be required to pay the contract out, and certainly, you know, make sure that things are made right. But the fact that basically the NWHL kind of walked away and said, you know, we canceled the rest of the season, we're done paying, and now there's some issue that way. This is crazy. So Powers, who went on to say in this, this reports on morningconsult.com if you're looking for the information on this, but Powers went on basically to say that in his termination letter, Powers wrote that, quote, it was not practical under the circumstances to provide the NWHL with any further opportunity to remedy its breach, unquote, given the risks to the participants, staff members, and the local community that they posed. So basically he's saying, you just keep your COVID away from us.
Yeah, like, just don't come back. Thank you.
Yeah. So not good for the NWHL. That's a bad look for them, but
not great, definitely.
No, there's not good news there. Speaking of road trips, Wheeler, no Blake Wheeler on the road trip to Montreal, to Ottawa, as they're going to do some concussion testing, looks like, on him. And they didn't use the word specifically to call it a concussion, but basically going to give him the 5 games off to clear the cobwebs, and hopefully he's all right after that. So moving around the lineup, Jansen Harkins gets back in. Hopefully we see Harkins stick around, but you'll see some movement there between a few players as Perreault gets moved up a line, Andrew Kopp gets moved up a line, and Harkins will jump in on that fourth line. Do you think the Jets will miss Wheeler on this road trip?
You know what? I don't know. I don't want to say like no, because I mean, obviously he still has some sort of an impact, but I think that they might be okay.
Like, I want to say, I was going to say before we go on, I actually agree with you. I think that they have the depth that they could be okay. I mean, don't get me wrong. Blake Wheeler is Blake Wheeler. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's certainly a voice in the room. He's certainly a voice on the bench. He's certainly a player on the ice. Mm-hmm. I think there's enough depth there that the Jets could be okay.
No, exactly. That's why I'm like, I don't want to say no, because he brings something different. But like we've talked about lots of times, they have the depth. But again, a lot of that depends on their consistency too, right? Or who's showing up. So maybe now that he's not there, there's going to be more people stepping up and saying, you know what, we got this. I don't know. But it'll be interesting to see.
I'm excited to see how the – and again, I'm not saying that this is a negative to Blake Wheeler in any way. Don't misconstrue this. But I'm excited to see how the Jets do without their captain. Like,
yeah.
I know there's gonna be guys that certainly have that voice in the room that can take over for him, but I'm excited to see who sort of steps up and makes this their team for the next 5 games. Because I think that's a good showing as to not only the depth that you have offensively, defensively, but certainly the depth you have in terms of the leadership in that room as well.
No, definitely. And that's like a huge thing that you need as a team. And obviously, Blake Wheeler does a really good job of that. So, yeah, obviously, like, they have depth and stuff. It'll just be interesting to see who really, like, stands up and, you know, does that, like, not does his job, essentially, but just takes that role on, whereas, I don't know, I'm excited, though. I'd love to have Wheeler there, but you know what
I mean. I mean, you want the full team and certainly all the weapons available, but if you can't, well, you know, fill in best you can. But exactly. Some good news out of the hockey world, finally, as we get through all the bad news. The good news... The Chicago Blackhawks made a big purchase yesterday. I don't know if people were aware of this, but Blackhawks went out and bought the Rockford IceHogs from the local Rave, R-A-V-E group. That's the title of the group that owns the Rockford IceHogs. They went out and bought Rockford, and now the Blackhawks own the Rockford IceHogs and have guaranteed that Rockford will remain in Rockford, Illinois, until 2037 at the very earliest. So... Chicago going out and basically solidifying an AHL franchise in a big way.
Yeah, I love that. That's a long, long time too. That's perfect.
Right. I mean, we're talking about like the next 15 years will be constantly Rockford Ice. And I mean, of course, you expect, you know, whatever good fortune the Ice Hogs have seen so far will continue with the Blackhawks running them now. But I mean, A, it gives the Blackhawks a lot more control over that Rockford team. But B, the fact that you don't have to worry about that arena maybe going empty or, you know, there's no team there to watch for the next 15 years is completely a non-issue at this point. So with some of the movement we've seen in the AHL with teams moving around and stuff or whatever, Rockford is going to be a pillar in that community now.
Yeah, I like that. It's exciting.
I'm happy about that.
Good news. That is some good news.
Yeah. Also some good news, although I don't know if this is good news. I mean, I think it's good news, but Hockey Winnipeg now accepting applications for coaches. Looking for coaches for the Winnipeg Avros and the Winnipeg Ice Hockey female under 18 AAA programs. So I can't see, we have a fairly decent relationship with Ashley Van Eglin and the Winnipeg Avros. I can't see Ashley not coming back, but they're looking for coaches. So if you're interested in coaching, get your name in. Hockey Winnipeg is looking for information from people, and certainly they want to see some stuff. Deadline for the application, if you're interested in getting in on this, April 30th, 2021. So you have till the end of the month. All information, hockey coaching cover letters and resumes should be sent to Brent Poplawski at development@hockeywinnipeg.ca. So there you go. Maybe there's changes on the way for the Avros and the Ice, but I can't see. I mean, I think that, you know, the work that Ashley Van Eglin's done with the Avros
is basically
amazing. They're at the top of the standings every year. Like, there's no way that you say no to Ashley, like, unless she doesn't want to be there, unless she has something else that's going on. Maybe she's moving on to something else, but I don't know. I mean, that Avros team is rock solid from top to bottom because of her.
Oh, absolutely. She's an incredible coach. So, that's hopefully, she's not going anywhere. I mean, even if she is, maybe it'll be not a step up, but you know what I mean? Like, just a new opportunity, but
I do. That's
some, I don't know. Yeah. Like you said, I don't know if it's good news or bad news.
I'm just expecting though, they're putting it out as a general call out, like they normally do every year in terms of information. Yeah. And then they'll go through and, I mean, again, I'm not saying that Ashley's got a shoe in, but she's basically going to be the coach of the Avros again if she wants to. So,
yeah, no, exactly.
Big deal happened yesterday in the NHL, kind of kicking off the trade deadline. And this will sort of be the last sort of good news story because it does involve a Winnipegger. Islanders made a deal. They acquired Winnipegger Travis Zajac and Kyle Palmieri from the New Jersey Devils for basically nothing.
Oh, okay.
The Islanders sent AJ Greer, Mason Jobst, a first rounder in 2021 and a conditional fourth rounder in 2022 to the Devils in exchange for Zajac and Palmieri. And somehow, I don't know how he does it, but Lou Lamoriello must have hypnotized Tom Fitzgerald because Devils also agreed to retain 50% of both of their salaries.
Oh, wow.
So basically the Islanders are doing a true rental in that they're paying nothing for these guys and they're going to use them in the playoffs and then let them go.
I like that. I mean, I don't like that, but that's just, I mean, you don't really hear about that. Like,
no,
or about that, but you know, that doesn't happen often is what I'm trying to say.
But I mean, it makes the Islanders better. Does it make them Stanley Cup favorites? I wouldn't say so, but they get a good face-off guy and a good defensive forward in Travis Zajac, certainly a guy who can play down the middle and, you know, on those second, third, fourth lines. And then Kyle Palmieri is a, you know, great scorer, chance to really sort of upgrade their power play with Palmieri on it as well. So, I mean, if you're giving up a first for two players that can maybe take you to the second or even third round, I mean, the Islanders have shown at times some incredible winning streaks this season. I think they won at one point, they were like 8 or 9 in a row or something like that or whatever. So if you're an Islanders fan, you have to be happy about this. If you're a New Jersey fan, I don't really know what you're getting excited about. I know Tom Fitzgerald was on social media today saying that he hopes that both players win the Stanley Cup and that the New Jersey Devils win the 32nd pick overall. I mean, I don't know. Either way, I mean, it's a good trade. So I guess for the Islanders. So, and hey, Barry Trotz gets another Winnipeg kid to play for him.
There you go.
Just a reminder, folks, again, I'm going to drop this in once more. St. Adolph is up for Kraft Hockeyville. I want to make sure that we're aware of this. I want to make sure that everybody's aware of this. You have to register. You have to go and register to vote. To do that, get over to crafthockeyville.ca. Voting opens at 9 a.m. Eastern time, 8 a.m. Manitoba time. We'll run through till 6 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Central time on April 10th. So get over and register. Once you register, you can sign up for whatever you want. There's a couple of check boxes. Just uncheck them. Who cares? Get in there and then, again, mash that button. Like vote until you are basically banned from voting ever again.
No, exactly.
Again, the other three finalists are Bob Cage in Ontario, who has that song written about them. They're not really known for hockey. Elsa Patog, First Nation in New Brunswick, which, I mean, great to see an Indigenous community in there, but they're not going
to
win.
Want to win.
They're not going to win. Lumsden, Saskatchewan, which is basically a suburb of Regina, so they're automatically out. Like, that's not fair. Yeah. So they're done. They're excluded. And then St. Adolph, who has, I mean, again, they have that the amazing corn. They have that the Guinness record now for the biggest ice maze.
Yeah.
I mean, St. Adolph is doing amazing things on their own. Why not give them a hockey game to enjoy?
Exactly. I just finished registering there, so I'm ready to go for tomorrow. So
there you go. There you go.
Register tonight, so that way tomorrow you log in and you just vote 8,000 times in a row.
Right. So the voting opens again on April 9th tomorrow at 8 a.m. Manitoba time. We'll run until... Oh, I guess it says here 5 p.m. I thought it was 4. I thought it was 6 p.m. on, maybe I had the wrong time, but 5 p.m. Eastern on April 10th. So 4 p.m. Eastern or 4 p.m. Central time, excuse me, in Manitoba. The announcement will be made on April the 10th. So So it sounds like Hockey Night in Canada, they'll have the announcement. So what happens now, and again, this is where social media comes in, and you should be on this right now, folks. Community score comes from two main categories. 80% from their nomination story score, which, I mean, that goes to the voting and everything like that. 20% total rally points. The total rally points is what we're accumulating right now. We want to make that as high as possible.
Definitely.
So get over there and rally hard and earn that 20% for St. Adolph so that we can get that arena improvement, which is phenomenal. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I do know how much that would help them, but I don't know how much, you know, people are aware. $250,000 in an upgrade.
It's quite the little chunk of change there.
Right. Like $250,000 for an arena out in St. Adolph would be monstrous for them.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything bad. Like, they're already guaranteed 25, but $250,000 is awesome. So,
yeah, no, that's insane. I love it. So let's make sure we're all voting whenever you have a chance, or if you're like me and not doing anything, just going to sit at my computer and continue to vote till it kicks me out. But.
Exactly. Until I'm banned from voting. In saying that though, folks, again, you got to vote. You got to go and register. You got to go and vote and get that done as soon as possible, so you can get in there tomorrow and just overwhelm the server and crush it. So
yeah,
I want to see them win. Again, $250,000 would be fantastic, but I'm more excited to see an NHL game in St. Adolph.
Yeah, that would be super cool. I would love to see it. So again, go vote.
Yeah, get it done, folks. With that though, we're going to be out of here for another week. Going to get set for next week when we celebrate the St. Adolph Craft Hockeyville win on this show. That means you got to vote, folks. That's what we're getting at. So we're alluding to. So go and vote and make them win. And then we'll have a big celebration show next week. Jenna, anything you want to say before we leave and get out of here for another week?
No, go vote tomorrow. That's about right. It. That's all I have to say.
Do want to thank the Lamoureux for joining us on the show tonight. Again, great chat with them. And certainly, I mean, whenever you get a chance to sort of pick an Olympian's brain, you get way smarter, and I feel way smarter because of them. In saying that, though, again, go vote for St. Adolph as soon as you can, folks. Crafthockeyville.ca. Go register. Go vote. And let's win the hockey game for that community. Well, that, folks, we're out of here for another week here on The Hockey Show. Get out and pick up a copy of Dare to Make History, the book by Jocelyn and Monique Lamoureux. A fantastic book. Highly recommended. Comes very recommended from this show. But a great book if you want to read a little bit about their history and certainly some of the stuff that went on with USA Hockey. I highly recommend it. Absolutely recommended reading for anybody that wants to read it. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio with Skippy coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. It is The Hockey Show for another week. We'll see you next Thursday, everybody. Take it easy. I feel good, so you're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 in Winnipeg.
Game on!
Game on!
Hey, UMFM listeners, did you enjoy that previous show? If so, UMFM is seeking new volunteer contributors who want to produce engaging spoken word content. Why not start a radio show on UMFM to tell your story and learn some great new skills while doing so? We offer remote training to help you get set up to record from the comfort of your own space. Get in touch with us at info@umfm.com to sign up for volunteer training today. The next round of training sessions are starting soon, so don't delay. We can't wait to hear your voice on 101.5 UMFM. During our time away from campus, here's a friendly reminder that the UMSU Service Center is here to help you with all your Winnipeg transit-related needs. If you're a new student and need to get your post-secondary PAGO card set up, we're the place to go. We'll get you set up quickly and help you save 20% versus a regular adult full fare pass. Lost your PAGO card? Don't sweat it, we've got you covered there as well. We're currently open Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m., so come visit us in room 101 on the main floor of the UMSU University Center, call us at 204-474-8211, or email us at umsu@umsu.ca.
people were so nice in Winnipeg. It was freezing. And they kept apologizing for the weather. They're like, sorry it's so cold, sorry it's so cold. I was like, I'm almost positive it's not your fault. But they kept apologizing, sorry about the weather. Eventually I was like, did you not pay a bill or something?
Politely broadcasting from Winnipeg, this is 101.5 UMFM.
Weather work different up here?